Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Millennial Life. My name is Joe Cole. This is my podcast where I talk to millennials about their lives and how they are managing young adulthood. I apologize for not releasing an episode last week. I had a last-minute cancellation, but glad to be back this week. How are all yous guys doing? I am doing okay. Pretty normal week this week. You know, I worked, I exercised, and I wasn't as shocked as I should have been about a major party presidential nomination being a crazy man and what the hell is going on. But you know what? Here's the thing. You know, even before the whole grabbing woman's private parts comment thing got leaked, I would hear a lot of liberals or anti-Trump people say, you know, I don't understand how we live in a world where anyone would want to vote for him. And I think people need to realize that the reality is 43%, or whatever it is now, of the population support him. So there's got to be a reason. And I've championed on the podcast before the idea of how, you know, no matter how much you think your opinion or belief is the right one or the moral one, you know, you should always investigate the other side. There's no reason to condemn people just because they don't believe what you do. And the reason I'm saying this is because I would like to recommend an episode of the podcast called The Ezra Klein Show. The episode is called Best Conversation I've Had About the Election with Molly Ball. My friend and past guest Mustafa Eligar recommended it to me, and in it they bring up a lot of amazing points, like great points, things that like I had thought of before but never was able to articulate in such a way, and things that made so much sense about the appeal of Trump and why his campaign has been successful so far, and that they're the reasons that people support him aren't all surface level or malignant. So instead of, you know, liberals labeling all Trump supporters as one thing or wrong, and I'm not saying that all liberals do that. I mean, I'm a liberal. I don't do that. I know a lot of liberals who don't. You know, try to figure out where they're coming from. Obviously, I'm not telling you to vote for him. I'm not voting for him. But yeah, just listen to that and always try to challenge yourself. And the only reason I really brought that up today is because today on the podcast, I have Edward Barbini as a guest. Edward, or Eddie B, as I refer to him in the podcast and in RL, real life, is another person I met in an improv class, the one that I had with some of the other past guests. So we talk about that kind of stuff. But through asking him about some of his other interests, we started talking about politics and the election. And afterward, Ed was very adamant about me taking everything he said about politics out because he thought that what he said wasn't anything new or super insightful and was just all things that, you know, people have said before. But I wanted to keep it in because I don't think that it's all things people have said before or things that I've heard already. I think what he offered was fair, and he was non-biased as one could possibly be when you have a specific opinion. And I thought that he kind of innately did what I just said I hope people try to do, which is attempt to acknowledge the full scope of everything and always, you know, try to be as honest as possible with yourself about the reality of things. So, Eddie, what I'm saying is I'm keeping it in. So I hope you're okay with that. But that was just a small part of the conversation I had with Ed, and I very much enjoy it, so I hope you do too. Here he is, Edward Barbini. Was made by my date. My fraternity and several fraternities at my school had a tradition where the date of the female date of the male date for their fraternity would make a cooler that represents them.
It's very cool.
And since I'm very singular, all it has is Breaking Bad on it.
Yeah, you like television.
And an American flag.
That
I like
a cool bed.
Oh, what? Area. Yeah,
that
I
looks
have
very cozy.
I have a. Am I even recording?
That looks very, very cozy.
Yeah. I hope we're recording. I think we are. Yeah, we are.
Oh, should I?
No. I'm just testing it out.
Okay.
Just keep talking. I recently got, I used to live in that room over there.
Uh-huh.
And our house recently got like a renovation.
Oh, okay.
And then I moved in here. And this, so right here where my bed is, was the end of the house. Like,
oh, wow,
like
so you added.
The end of the house was right here.
Cool. And wow.
And this room that we're sitting in was more that way into the hallway.
Wow.
So we pushed this way and came in this
way.
Wow. Now I have this like little...
So I'm looking at the remnants of of history.
I have a little nook area. With...
I like it. It's very cool. Where do you get those ads from?
Those were all
magazines?
From Rolling Stone magazines that I just ripped out.
Cool.
I should take the vinyl one down since
it's gotten canceled. Who did I break the news to on that? Was that you?
I don't think so.
I told someone that vinyl was canceled and they were disappointed.
Yeah.
And I had to verify it.
It like was just almost good.
Really? I heard it was good. I didn't watch it. I was surprised that it got...
It was just like missing something.
Yeah. Also, I would like to point out that your fire hydrants are adorable. They're like minions.
Because they're blue and yellow.
Does anyone ever tell you that?
Well, here's
minions?
The thing. No. Oh, because they look like minions.
Don't they? it looks like they're wearing the overall. It looks like a minion, but with a huge nose.
The column, I guess you would say, of the fire hydrant.
Yeah, tube. I don't know.
Is blue. And then the areas that you plug a hose in are yellow.
Yeah, I know.
The reason
looking,
they did
I'm,
that...
I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, I'm telling... There's other people listening to this.
Oh, is this being recorded?
It's being recorded since I...
I thought you said this was just for test.
No. It's been recorded.
Oh, I haven't said anything...
Make sure it's closer to your face. Yeah, so the funny thing about that is...
Wait, so this is being recorded?
This is being recorded.
But no one could hear what I was saying.
No, it was just you were a little far back, but
okay.
It was picking up. It's,
right.
It's quite all right. I don't even know how much...
So that whole conversation about the magazine ads?
That was all in.
And your house?
And the house I think was in. I don't know when I started it. I just hit it.
Well, I just want to describe the setup for people who have never seen your room.
Yeah, go ahead.
Two big microphones.
Right.
And some...
They're not weirdly big.
They're
not
the
like
size microphones
up.
That we have in my house. But and then there's some magazine ads for your favorite shows.
Mm-hmm.
Deer heads everywhere, high and low.
Deer heads, no.
And they've all got a participation medal on, but none of them are Joe's medal. It's a weird room.
I have half movie things and half. I have one medal in here somewhere.
What's it for?
I ran a 5K last year.
Oh, nice.
But other than that, it's my athletic history is very barren.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But no, the magazine rip outs are just more not intense likes. Like if I really like something, I'll take the next step and I'll buy the big poster.
Yeah, I see that.
So
those are your favorites, and then runners up are below.
Yeah, runners up are smaller inside.
Yeah, it's very cool.
What were we talking? Oh, the fire hydrant. Funny thing about the fire hydrant is we're just talking about things that no one can see, but we can see.
Yeah, I know. We'll post a picture.
It's called
up
a
later.
Scene painting.
Yeah,
it's all my improv. Okay, so the funny thing about those is the reason they did that is because our high school's colors are blue and gold,
mm-hmm.
but we're like a navy blue and gold, and
that's
blue and yellow.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
No.
It looks like a minion.
Yeah, it looks
like
a
minion.
Those exact colors. It's the yellow
but
of
like
a minion,
with either a huge nose
mm-hmm.
or just a minion that's very proud.
I also want to say that normally I drink water during
mm-hmm.
the interviews. I'm drinking a protein shake.
Oh, wow. So just let everyone know. Joe's
I don't know why
that's
different. I don't know why it's different. Oh, dear. Got on my book.
What are you reading?
This is a book called The Defining Decade that I haven't started yet. Why Your 20s Matter and How to Make the Most of Them Now. I feel like I should read those types of books if I'm having this type of podcast.
Yeah, sure.
And I also, my mom's coworker who's in her 20s, who I'm hopefully going to interview soon, recommended that book to me, as well as another one called Generation Me that I started and don't know if I agree with so far.
How far are you into it?
Like a chapter or two.
Well, give it time.
Yeah.
You know.
The main thing that I disagree with was that the author said she found that us as a generation less so care about what other people think of us or say, and or more so care about our own individuality and not what the thing that everyone's doing is.
Okay.
And I was like,
I think
no.
I disagree with that also.
I was like,
yeah.
no.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe we hide it more. Maybe like through technology, we can make it seem like we're all doing our own thing. But
I can't tell if that's a positive view or a negative view, yeah, but I think it's wrong.
Yeah, I think it's wrong. I misunderstood it.
Well, I'm just hearing it from you. So,
yeah,
which is how... maybe you're just wrong. But I, my take from what you told me, I don't think I agree.
Anyway, well, enough of this pre-show banter.
So what else? We covered the fire hydrants.
What else do we see in front of us? I'm sitting here with Eddie B. Edward Barbini, who I met at a UCB improv class, Improv 301, and the class that past guest Evan Samlin and Cameron Shapiro.
Cameron, yeah.
They were both in as well.
Two good podcast sessions. Sessions? Episodes?
Episodes. All right. You listened?
I listened to the majority of those.
Oh,
yeah.
Get out.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to see what I was up against.
You wanted to see
why I needed to win.
Oh, it was a competition for you.
Well, they don't know that, but I very much think of it that way. So,
but now we're in a different 401 class. You just had your show.
Yeah, it was bad.
Why was it bad?
It just was not good. I'm not going through anything, but I've got like a.
You're on
I've a dry
been
spell? Bad lately.
Why? Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Well, when I get bad, it's generally because I'm a little more reserved.
Mm.
When I'm not reserved, I'm better than that. So, but now I don't know.
Why do you think you've been more reserved?
I don't know. I just haven't really been feeling it. And I go in, like I was ready to go into the show. I was like, people are going to see me make some strange choices. And
yes.
I didn't.
Yeah, yeah,
it,
yeah.
It was
yeah.
just a very.
It
was just not good. I've just not been good. Everyone else was fine too. It was no one's best show for sure.
Yeah.
But, and you know, the instructor said that.
Yeah, that's what they said. I mean, that's what she said for our show.
Yeah, your show was. I enjoyed it.
No, it was terrible. Ed came to my show.
I enjoyed it.
My class of show, and so the way it works is that you for the improv curriculum at UCB Upright Citizens Brigade, there's four levels: 101, 213, 401, and for 401.
Well, there's one after that.
There's advanced study after that,
which I don't think I'm going to have to be worrying about at this rate.
Yeah, well, for 401 is for all the classes you pretty much pass if you show up on time and you do all the required things. 401 to advanced study is the only class in which your talent is kind of in question as to whether or not.
Well,
you
say
make
it's not, but it is.
It
definitely
totally
is.
Totally is.
Yeah,
like if you're not ready to go to advanced study talent-wise, then they don't pass.
Oh yeah, I mean everyone would say, oh, it's not an audition, but it feels very much like it.
And there's
like,
all these like. Said to be unnecessary but totally necessary requirements, like having outside experience in class, like a practice team, and like performing with an indie team, and like
they don't know that.
Well, isn't there like to get an advanced study? Isn't there like an application where you have to fill all that shit out?
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. Well,
I don't even know if
we should do that. We should get on that.
That's why I've been trying to.
Yeah.
No, we already have it in practice squad.
A big one.
No.
The biggest.
We meet every week.
Yep.
But yeah, so for 401, there's three performances, right?
Yeah.
And you just had your first.
Kind of spaced out. What was yours? Was that your first?
Yeah, it was my first. Okay. Yeah. I think you started just a week after me.
Yeah, did I? I guess I did. Yeah. Yeah.
And for ours as well, our teacher was like, our teacher is Nicole Trespel.
Mm.
She's
good
big,
improviser, yeah.
Great, a big name at
She is
big name at UCB.
Yeah, most of the instructors are big names,
and she was in like Broad City, and
pretty cool.
But she said to us like, let's just all know that this is the worst you've all collectively ever done.
Go down,
yeah.
Yay!
So what was your scene? Were you in scenes?
Yeah.
What, like two people? What was your, what was...
Well, my dad showed up too.
Is that a bad thing?
No, I like that he comes. Mm-hmm. I like that he wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I get nervous when people are in the audience when
that you have to prove something to? Do you feel like you have
it's
to
just,
prove
I'm
that
not,
you're funny to him?
I'm not, no.
No.
That's good. Not at all. Same. But I get very, like, people don't see me pretending to be other people all the time. So it's an awkward thing, you know? It's an awkward thing when it's, Edward's not generally that person. And so I just got a little, it's not his. I've been reserved throughout the class too. It's just, I'm looking for something to blame it on. And like so many other things I've.
I said the same thing before mine. I was like, I'm normally a person who falls into like trying to be a straight man, trying to make things seem like realistic, and I'm not, where there's other people who can be like bigger and more goofy and silly. And I was like, beforehand, I was made like an active decision. I was like, I'm going to try to be bigger today. I'm going to be trying to go be a little sillier. And like that even more so made me more reserved.
Yeah. That's what happens. That's what happened there. I was in scenes. They were not great.
What was that?
Well, we had to do, you guys did a pattern game before yours. We did a living room.
Oh,
opening.
you guys don't do pattern?
No, we do not.
Oh, wow.
And everyone's happy about that, but me, I enjoy the pattern game.
Yeah,
but
no one likes pattern game.
Yeah, I like it. It gives me ideas. And this gives me less, the living room gives me less ideas. But I think it's also because we just started it and we don't really know how to do it that well.
Living room and pattern games are things that improv teams do before shows to try to generate ideas before doing the ideas.
Yeah, sorry, I could have.
No, it's my job.
And we did that and got some good ideas. One of them was, I don't know, we talked about Carrie, you know, Carrie, the movie.
Yeah, the movie Carrie, yeah.
Yeah. And so I took mine off of that.
What was this? What did you try to make this scene? The game of the scene?
I didn't know. I didn't know. I just walked up and I was like, how was prom? And the other person came out with me, stuck one of her arms behind her back. And so I was like, I guess she got her arm chopped off at prom. I'm going to say that.
Oh, God.
And so it quickly became arm got chopped off at prom. Mm. And I did not give the scene the gravity that it
Well, how do you heighten an arm get chopped off?
Well, you don't even have to heighten it, but I could have been like anybody would have been if someone's arm had gotten chopped off, but I was not.
That's a hard thing when things are super absurd and fantastical.
Yeah.
It's hard to,
it just,
in the moment, be like, oh my God, your arm is chopped off.
Yeah, no. And to everyone listening to this, it sounds very stupid that this is even something we're talking about, but.
Oh, me and Evan, totally, me and Evan Salmon, we were talking about yesterday, how like trying to describe to someone in retrospect like what the improv scene was about, even if it's a successful one,
because it sounds very stupid.
Yeah, because it's a very in the moment like thing. Mm-hmm. It, a lot of times, and that's another thing is that me and Evan have talked about is like, what is that?
I pulled it out of the chair by accident.
What is it?
I apologize. It's a staple.
I thought you found like a piece of dirt or something.
No, this is what you get when you invite me to your house.
You pulled a staple.
I dismantle your furniture staple by staple.
Oh, it's quite all right. What was it talking about? Oh, we
also, am I close enough to this microphone?
Oh, yeah,
the majority?
Totally.
Because some of the time I feel like I'm...
No, you can, and you can even do this if you want. Like, I might just pull one of these and like lean back, you know?
Something. Oh, it's really in there.
Yeah, this is a little more relaxation.
Yeah, I like this.
Yeah. That's good. It doesn't have to be right. Something that me and Evan were talking about is something I heard is about how improv was initially created to help sketch writers form ideas.
It was that, and it was also, I think, acting exercises also. Mm-hmm. It was mostly short form. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't remember who, it's somewhere in Chicago, but started doing long form as its own.
Yeah.
As its own form of, as its own form of, yeah. And then it kind of took off.
But the thing we were talking about is a lot of times improv scenes don't translate to sketch. Like sometimes they do, sometimes there's a strong enough game or idea of a scene where it's like, oh, that could be in a sketch, that can be heightened, that could be explored more. But a lot of the times what the funny thing is that it's someone just coming up with it off the top of their head rather than the actual content.
That makes it kind of hard. I took because I was over at Magnet too before I did.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, you had much more experience than it showed in our 301 class.
I don't know if it showed. No, but it showed.
You were easily the funniest person.
I don't think
most
so.
Most comfortable with it. You were definitely most comfortable.
I appreciate you saying that, but I don't know if that's true. I did have a little more experience, I guess, but at this point, one more year of experience is not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not a huge...
But there were things where, like, I kind of am realizing now that I feel like you were instinctively doing in 301, where you were kind of just, you weren't thinking about it and just responding truthfully. Like, in a way that, like, a normal person
would. Well,
that's
another thing, because I'll go through spells where I do that, and that's perfect. And then I go through other spells where I don't do that, and then I think maybe I should be just answering naturally.
Yeah, yeah.
And then things get put back, like... The way an improv rut works, as far as I know, and as far as people have told me, and I've only been doing it for a little over 2 years, but I feel like I've been in more ruts than non-ruts. And
sorry, that was my phone.
No, yeah.
I don't even know where it is.
You eventually have to just figure it out.
Right.
And if you don't figure it out, you eventually just
stop doing it?
You can just stop doing it. I haven't gotten to that point, but mm-hmm. you get to the point where it's just you've hit the absolute lowest point of your improv experience, and then you just you crumble. Mm. You crumble as a person until you don't mm-hmm. care.
Right.
And then once you don't care anymore,
right,
you start doing great scenes because you don't care. Like the whole it's like golf.
Right.
The more you think about it, the worse you're going to be.
Right. Let me tell you.
I don't know if it's exact. I don't know. I feel like golf, but it's a mental thing.
Well, there's
like
a thing golf. There's a thing in sports where I've talked about this on the podcast before, is like you need to have a good head. Mm. It's that thing. And there's a movie called For the Love of the Game with Kevin Costner, where he says, clear the mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like if you can get out of your own head and it just becomes muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
My most recent class this past Sunday, which when people hearing this, it'd be two Sundays ago. Was the best I ever did.
Really?
It was the best.
That's great.
And it was, I mean, halfway through 401, I'm sure you're about to get this, they give individual notes.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm looking forward to it, but
yeah. Well, the thing Nicole gave notes to me about is that she could, I almost just knocked over water. She's seen instances where like she can tell that I understand game and like know how to heighten and that stuff, but that my commitment to scenes could be a little stronger and not to be afraid to be silly and not be afraid to be wrong or care what she thinks. Mm. And I think that I kind of do as like an instinctive like self-defense mechanism, whereas like if I say something that I'm not 100% sure is the right thing, I, as Joe, will, like, make a weird face as an attempt to be, like, to the audience, like, yeah, I know that I don't think that's that great either, instead of just being fully, like, confident in it and just trying to sell it, because that's another thing is, like, if you selling it is, like, half the battle, kind of.
I think you'd be surprised, like, how well people respond to just you staying in it. Even if you understand it's terrible, they won't know it's terrible because you've convinced them that it's
right,
not.
Right, right. So what I'm saying is this last class is I wasn't thinking, and in the pattern game there were things that I said that just kind of came like came out of nowhere, just like wasn't even like a fully formed thought. It was just something I said in the moment and they got laughs.
Well, I mean, you're a funny person, so your first instinct will probably be something interesting, you know, at least.
You know what the idea that someone pitched was? High class rats. Just upper class rats. I don't know how we got there. And I said in like a really pompous voice, I was like, if I find cheese on the street, I'll only eat it if it's brie, something like that. And people laughed. And then I said another one, like I only frequent the sewers of the Upper East Side. And people laughed at that too. And I was just kind of thinking,
bam.
Yeah, two little zingers. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you feel like you're in a rut now.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been in ruts before?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
How do you, so you said you think just getting out of them is just
sometimes
like
I have great ideas where it's like, oh, you know what I need to do? I just need to think less, which is the whole, I mean, that's such an obvious point.
Then you start thinking about thinking less.
Mm-hmm. I'll like come up with ideas and of how to get out of it, and sometimes they work, but more often than not, I just get to a point where I'm so bad that I stop caring, and then it just stops. And they also say, which is pretty comforting, I think, is that someone, I read this somewhere, but at Magnet we have what's called Big Sibs for level 1 through 3.
Are you still taking classes there?
No, I haven't been, but I would like to go back at some point. I've done just about everything there.
All the classes?
Yeah, I don't have time to
do both.
I don't have time to get good enough to get past their last level and then apply for a house team. I could really only do one theater right now since I'm in school.
Mm.
So it's like,
we're going to talk more about that later.
Okay. And we have what's called Big Sibs over at Magnet, and so one,
which is another theater in New York City.
Yeah, it's another.
Is it probably like the second biggest improv theater in New York City?
Yeah, I think it's between. It's somewhere in between UCB and the Pit.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know the Pit that well.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's different. They each of them have nuances, and I really like the Magnet. And where were they? Yeah, so one of my Big Sibs, who was just a mentor for the class, I was going through a rut. And he said, you know, well, it's probably good, because usually when you're in a rut, it just means you've stopped accelerating. And when you're done with the rut, you'll be back to accelerating and you'll feel great. And you'll probably have improved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Generally, at the end of a rut, you find that you're better than you were at the beginning. I find that.
Mm.
And like, I'm not particularly good, but I do notice that any period of growth I have comes right after feeling bad about it.
Wow.
So it's doesn't help. I mean, it still does not feel very good because mm-hmm. I do put a lot of value because I like improv a lot and I like comedy a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I suck, it kind of is not fun, but it's nice to know that maybe if that guy was right, mm-hmm. That I'll be better at the end of it, or I could just be terrible still and forever. And mm-hmm. everything these past 2 years has been a fluke.
When you say you like improv and comedy a lot, when was the first instance of like you trying to, or what was the first instance of you being like, maybe I want to do this or like pursue this?
So I tried out for my improv team in college freshman year, mm-hmm. and I did not get it. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an excuse. I mean, if I were better, I could have gotten it, but I didn't want it anyway, so yeah. I was okay. My parents really wanted me to have it because I didn't have any friends because I was a freshman and I was shy. And so my parents were like, well, go, we'll meet funny people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I was like, great. So I auditioned. I really didn't know much about improv at that point.
Did you do theater in high school?
No, I did nothing. This was completely out of the blue. I was never into performing arts. I went to a theater camp one time because my friend Greg really wanted to do it. Twice, I guess we did it. And I was not good then. I wasn't great there. There was no reason for me to think that I
so
would
So what
be.
Was the impetus of them saying improv? Did they think you were funny?
Yeah, my parents think I'm funny some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But like
oh, the hardest I've ever killed is with my parents and my brother.
Oh, yeah. I'm never funnier than I am at home.
Or like at the lunch table.
Yeah.
That's like the hardest I've ever lived.
And it's so cheesy to say because your mom's going to say funny. You're funny. But I do think I'm funnier around my parents.
It's because one of the hardest things about being funny is like having for there being a mutual understanding of mm-hmm. A premise.
That's interesting.
So when you're with your people that you know best, there isn't like...
They get it.
Yeah, they get it. There isn't need to be any establishing of a premise.
No,
it's
they're
nice. Already there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a shorthand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like you're on the same page.
Yes, already. Yeah.
So it is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And...
So they were just thought you're funny, so they were just like, do improv?
They were like, do it. Maybe that's a good way to get friends. My dad had been telling me to start writing comedy for a few years. Mm-hmm. And but it was just like, that's something your dad tells you to do.
No, it's not.
And like, it's like a...
No, it's not.
Your dad's supposed to think you're funny. Mm-hmm. Like, all dads think their kids are funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Most dads want their kids to be an accountant.
Cameron's dad doesn't think he's funny, I'm sure.
It's because he's
Cameron's
not. No,
funny.
Just kidding.
Cameron's not funny. No, I'm sure Cameron's dad... likes Cameron just fine.
Yeah.
Most
dads want their kids to be an accountant, not write comedy.
Yeah. I already knew I wasn't going to be an accountant because I'm not.
And most kids try their whole lives to make their dads laugh.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Well, me and my dad make each other laugh. My dad's very funny as well. So, and I tried out, did not get it. And so I was like, mm-hmm. you know what? I was, for something I didn't want to do, I was bitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like did not want to go to their shows.
Yeah. What was their name?
Stranded in Pittsburgh.
Oh, where'd you go to college?
Fordham in the Bronx. Yeah. I don't know.
I was just drinking.
I vaguely remember reading why they named it that. But
do you
No, I don't off the top of my head. But
Bronx. Did you go to Arthur Avenue a lot?
Yeah, sure.
Oh my mm-hmm. god.
Yeah. It was a great place. Great place. And they were a very good improv troupe. I'm not disparaging them.
I gotta tell you, Fordham. I'm about to sneeze. Gotta tell you my Fordham story out.
Okie doke.
Oh, got it. Went away. Okay.
All right. That was disappointing. Even secondhand,
I
felt.
I know. I put two hands up. Okay. So continue.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to be knocking Stranded in Pittsburgh. They are very, very good. I was just being childish.
Did you ever join eventually?
No. I forgot all about it. And then at points in my college career, I was like, you know, maybe I should try stand up. It looks like fun. I've heard stand up is miserable.
Not fun.
And I just like, I would have done it too if I could have written anything funny and I couldn't. And so I forgot all about it. And then when Robin Williams died, that wasn't like a lot of people want to make things into, it wasn't an inspiration, but I watched a lot of Robin Williams videos and tribute videos after he died. And he was really, really funny. And I was like, you know, it's fun to be funny. And so I like looked into like things that he did, and he did a lot of stand up and stuff like
that. He went to Juilliard.
Yeah. He was a very, very impressive actor.
Mm-hmm.
And like they knew. From a very like they like when he got there, everyone knew he was great.
Right.
But I don't know, for whatever reason, like watching all his videos made me think it was like pretty cool to be funny. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, that's got to be fun to be funny in front of other people. Mm-hmm. And so I just like signed up for Magnet has I think they still do it, a free. Yeah, they definitely still do it. A free 2-hour intro to improv.
Wow.
So I did that and it was bad. I mean, the class was great.
But you were bad, you mean?
With Alana Fishbein and she's great. And I was just, I mean, no one was good. I mean, I don't think there was anyone in there who had any improv experience. It was just people just trying it out for 2 hours. And it was terrible until the very end. I got like one laugh and I was like, good, worth it. I'm going to do it again.
When was that?
Summer of 2014.
So summer going into your last.
Yeah, August of 2014. I didn't tell anybody I was doing improv until like two or three classes in. Because then if you're not, like, everyone has delusions. Mm-hmm. So what if I thought I was funny and no one else did? And so people would be like, oh, really? Oh, I don't know. So I didn't tell. I just told my parents. My parents cannot keep a secret. So I got to like Thanksgiving that year and all my aunts and uncles were like, I heard. I won't tell. But all of them came up to me. So it doesn't matter who they told at that point. Everyone knew. But it was good. A great decision. I'm happy I did it.
Wow.
Because now I can't picture not doing this, you know?
Right.
I can't picture not. Like, I had points during senior year and after senior year once I had graduated where I was just kind of like down and there was like nothing. I like wasn't excited about anything. I got an internship afterward and it was a good internship and I liked it, but I was just like, I was kind of like miserable. I wasn't really having any fun. And like improv was the only thing to look forward to. And I couldn't imagine if I didn't have improv to look forward to, I'd be miserable.
Wow.
So it was great. And so now I still feel, I don't feel miserable or anything like that, but I like still can't imagine like not doing improv or writing comedy or anything. Like I'm obsessed with it, I think.
Really?
Yeah, you know?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, on this podcast, I try to like relate to the guest and like, I pretty much ask, the questions I ask of people are questions that I pretty much have myself or things that I've kind of wondered about myself and see if you kind of have the same thing.
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry. I also feel like I haven't given you a chance to talk. Or
No. It's quite all right. It's quite all right. I was just listening because I'm interested in how our kind of paths differ. As I was someone in college who, well, you said that improv was like in freshman year in high school or in college was just a way to make friends. And then you didn't really do it until the summer of senior year of college, and you never had any creative inclinations. You never joined the theater other than just being like a funny person.
I didn't have any kind of. No, one time I thought I was going to join the theater troupe, but I did not.
Yeah, so. In college, what did you do in college? What did you major in college?
Economics.
Wow.
And I was an Arabic minor.
An Arabic minor,
which was fun.
Do you speak Arabic?
Speak. I speak a little bit.
That's five.
Yeah. You just say numbers to me, I'll understand that.
No,
I speak a little Arabic. I mean, I minored in it and I was much better at it. I forgot some of it. I could say like simple.
So hard.
Yeah. It's hard.
There's sounds in the Arabic language that are not normal to
No, they're
the
different.
English
they're different. They have different letters American. For different things. I once had an interview for an internship. And I won't say where it was for an insurance company firm.
Right.
How do you even?
Yeah.
Something. They sold insurance.
Right.
And I didn't particularly want it, but I said, you know what? Just it's good experience to interview. So I went in and then the woman was very, very nice up until a point. And she said, oh, so you study Arabic. What made you want to do that?
Yeah.
And so I figured, you know, break the ice, Edward, be, you know, like charming. I don't know if this was charming, but I was like in my head, like, this is a nice little response. No. I didn't say anything cringeworthy.
Okay.
Well, I might have, but it wasn't the most cringeworthy thing in the session. So I said, oh, it seemed like an interesting, relevant language, and it seemed easier than Chinese. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
And she puts down her pen and pad, and right there, I was like, oh man, did I say something? Because I say offensive stuff sometimes.
It is easier than Chinese.
It is.
Mandarin
I
is said a tonal language true. That is she, very hard
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, it's a hard language. And so she put down her pen and pad, and she looked at me, like right in the eyes, and she goes, I'm not racist. And I was like, oh man, is she going to tell me I'm racist? And she goes, but. I was like, oh, geez. I don't trust the Chinese.
Oh, no.
This isn't an interview for a professional thing.
But I don't trust
I don't
the
trust
Chinese.
The Chinese. And in my head, I was like, well, you seem like a racist. You're not helping your case at all.
That is racist.
It got worse.
Oh, no. Tell me.
And she goes, you know, well, my grandfather fought in World War II.
Oh, no.
My
grandfather fought in World War II. That's Japanese.
Bingo. And she goes, and he used to talk about all, she used the term, no good Japs. And I said, oh, man, I need to go. And she's like, no good Japs. And in my head, I was like, that is not the same thing as Chinese.
This was
first of all, that's incredibly
interview?
Offensive. Second of all, Japanese people and Chinese people are not the same. That's also offensive. And the third offensive thing was that she said she doesn't trust the Chinese anyway. So
the fourth offensive thing was that it was during an interview.
It was all offensive. Yeah, it was all offensive. And
the
then
the funny thing is that you thought that you said something offensive, yeah, and then she was,
yeah,
so offensive.
She was incredibly offensive, and then I was at ease because I was like, well, at least it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And then she, at the end of her little thing, her spiel about Asians, yeah, she said, you know what I mean? And then I was in a very, very difficult position because I don't want to disagree, yes, with this racist person because
yes, maybe it was all a test.
Exactly. Maybe that was what I was thinking. I was like, ooh, okay. So I took a second and I was like, do I say yes and just agree? But what if it's a test? And so I believe I went something like
the most fucked up test ever.
Yeah. How do you do that? You can't justify that. I would be right on Glassdoor the next day.
Oh,
just
my God.
And I said something along the lines, it's like the website for like, it's for like reviews of, it's like Yelp, but for jobs.
Oh, wow. I like learning things. I never knew that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's great because you could be on LinkedIn or you could be on Indeed. You could be on all these websites finding jobs and stuff. And you could, because I looked heavily for a job until I got into grad school and then I just,
yeah,
I quit. Mm-hmm. And you could say, oh, this company looks really cool, but let's just see.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially,
yeah,
with like startups, stuff like that, because you don't know if it's any good to work for. And they'll tell you. It'll tell you it has stars, it has reviews. It's a pretty cool.
So you went on. Oh, you,
I didn't, but I could have. Yeah. I should. Indeed, I should have. But I didn't even. Do you know what I mean? And I was just like, thank you. Probably said something nonsensical. Then I left. Oh, I just went home. I left. And all my roommates and friends were like, how'd the interview go?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, I don't, yeah, I don't want it.
You didn't even tell them? Did you tell
them? I told them.
Oh, my God.
It was
Well, weird. The thing I asked you that for is because I want to know.
Yeah, sorry.
No. It's obviously, I don't care that you told that story. It was hilarious.
I've never been on a podcast, so no. I don't know how much to talk.
No.
I don't know what I should be doing with my
if
hand.
If I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
Then that's what
don't
you
do that, though.
Okay.
I'll take that as a very offensive thing, and I'll leave.
No, I won't do that.
No, and I would.
You're leave. The guest. You're allowed to talk as
no,
much as
No, you're the
you
host.
Want.
You could tell me to shut
no,
up.
No, these people hear enough of me. They're like, stop.
People hear enough
stop,
of me, too.
Stop telling the same Louis anecdote over and over again. the thing the reason I asked you that is because.
What was the question?
I wanted to know about your college, what you did in college. I don't
and
know
I
how
I just volunteered
you got,
the racist interview.
I don't know how.
Oh, I told you I studied Arabic.
Oh, right.
Which I don't like to say very often because it sounds, since it's not Spanish or French or Italian,
it sounds pretentious. No.
So I don't like it, but my mom will do it. My mom will do it all the time.
Oh, my people
will say,
studied Arabic.
That's a on point. That's how my mom sounds. And
Edward?
No, she will, but she will, like, people will ask me what I studied, yeah, and if it's in front of her, she'll go, but tell them what you minored in.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, all right. Because now it does seem pretentious.
That's such
because
a mom thing.
Yeah, like it's one thing if you drop it in passing. Mm-hmm. It's another thing if you're like, but wait for this.
Yeah,
yeah. You think my economics degree was impressive? Wait till you hear what I minored in.
Well, that is, yeah, yeah. That is a very.
It's
important.
Not. A lot of people studied it. I enjoyed it. Well, I really did enjoy it, and I don't know it very well.
I have a friend who I interviewed on this podcast who works for the Oxford Business Group.
Cool.
Which is. He went around to, he lived in Qatar for a little, he
That's
lived in
very
Jordan,
cool, yeah.
He lived in Nigeria, and the company like interviews different people to like, I'm going to do a terrible job explaining this, but he pretty much, they write like this annual report about different sectors of the economy overseas so that like emerging businesses know where to invest.
Very cool job.
But like for something like that, that's an economics thing, mm-hmm, like Arabic obviously would be totally coming.
Yeah,
like, don't feel like
languages
it's pretentious.
I just don't. You know, I don't know what
I know what you're saying
anymore. Yeah,
I don't know what's pretentious anymore. It's pretentious to even have a podcast. I think
no, you've got. It's not like you're staying. It's not like you have it because you think people need to hear what you have to say.
Well, to a degree,
you're sharing other people's stories.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like you're sitting here being like, today on my podcast, Joe Cole.
Yeah,
because that'd be very weird.
But I do give. I just. Anyone who gives a public opinion, especially takes the time to create something that they could like this, it's a little innately pretentious.
Maybe, but it doesn't.
But everyone, but all people want people to validate their opinions and want people to care about what they say.
Yeah,
that's
yeah, and you've got a good outlet for it, and you I will give you this. I don't view it as pretentious, but if you view it as pretentious, you at least do it under the guise of you trying to inform people about other people.
Right, right, right.
You know, so you get to and say it, your piece, but really it's not about you.
And I've also said publicly that I'm doing this because I just want, and I, the reason I have people come on the podcast is because I want them to help me. Me asking questions is literally like, is like asking. Like,
I want your help.
Yeah, this literally, this is what this is. Like, I want your help. Is it okay if I think this? I'm going to ask you if you think this to see.
The first thing I thought of when you said I want people to help me is just you chained to the floor. And as people you leave, you're just like, no, don't leave me here. Don't leave me here.
That's the last part.
That's the last one. That's the cold that comes closing. At the end. Yeah. It's at the end. Joe pleading for freedom.
Well, the thing, so that one of the things along those lines is one thing that I think people who have creative aspirations who are around our age kind of go through, or something that I at least go through, is kind of figuring out the internal battle of when you kind of
hang up your boots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's one of those things of like, you feel like you have the ability to do something and you feel like you may have the potential for talent or for being able to, but then it's like that thing you said is like, is it a delusion? Or are you not as,
yeah. At what point are you going to realize that? Yeah, and you feel like, I don't know if this is how you feel, but
you feel like you're a fraud kind of.
It's inevitable. Yeah. That I'm eventually, and it might not, I mean, yeah. Look, people do go on and make a career out of things that we want to make a career out of, but I feel like it's inevitable that at the end, I'm just going to be like, well, you know what? This was a good hobby.
Yeah.
And I had a good time. And if that's fine, if that's the way it is, then I will keep this as a hobby. But for now, like, cause we're only 23.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that old. Sometimes it feels old because people do achieve their goals by 23.
Mm-hmm.
But we still do have time, but yeah, like you said, I do feel like I'm going to wake up at one point and be like, you know what, this just wasn't for me. I thought I was good at it, and I'm not.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, you're talking probably specifically improv. And
I am, but
for me is I've always just been into like stuff like just I can't even
just things
just performing artistic.
Yeah,
but like I could work at like a television studio, but like as an office job, and do like social media every day. But as long as like I'm in the building, you know what I'm saying?
It's interesting. It's an interesting job.
Yeah, but I don't know, navigating this all and like trying to figure out what the best thing to do and like how long you should be doing it. And if you're at the age we're at now, if we're at the right level of our talent.
Should I be much better? Should I be worse?
It's hard to, when you're in, and the reason I asked is because when you just decide to do that, like that late in the game, is it just without thinking? Because you already have like this other whole backup plan kind of like economics and like grad school, or is it just?
Yeah, I guess it was just because I like knew that, I mean, I do want to take it very seriously, but I know that since I have other things, I can tell people that it's just a hobby, and that way I avoid any embarrassment.
Yeah,
when it doesn't work out, I could be like, well, it was just a hobby. Don't you see me doing other things?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was kind of like that. I don't know. I know I got into it really late. I like hadn't done any performance based. I wasn't into performing arts at all.
Mm-hmm.
Performing arts. So it was like completely random. And when I was talking to people, when I started doing improv, people were like, oh, so do you have like a performance? Did you perform doing other things? Did you act? And they said, no. And you could tell in their eyes, they were like, it shows. But but everyone else had like, I mean, a lot of people don't want to just try it out unless they know that they are okay in front of a crowd at least, or have an interest in performing. And I didn't know any of that. And I just decided that I would do it.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a weird decision, but I like it so far. Yeah, I don't know. I got into it late, and I think about that all the time. I wish that I had. God, I'm breaking everything.
What did you do? What is it now?
I'm just slowly but surely ripping off
the screw. Those are that doesn't matter.
Sorry about that. But yeah, I lost my train of thought. But I got into it late, and I think I regret not having tried out again for the improv team at school, because I meet people who have done 4+ years of improv before I meet them, and then we're at the same level of schooling, and they're so much better.
I'm just worried about getting to the moment like 3 years from now where I'm like, I'm done, but I could have done more, I think.
Yeah.
But now it's over.
Well, it doesn't have to be, though. If you really go for it, mm-hmm. you can, not to say you can do whatever you want, because that is such an ideal thing to say. Yeah, right. But I mean, like,
no, you're, I can't, because we live in a society where I need to have money. And
I think you're pretty talented.
Thank you.
Right? So, I mean, and you've only been doing it for...
My Improv 101 class was January of this year.
So not even a year. Mm-mm. So, I mean, there's no reason. And, like, that's the thing. You can't, or I've found that I can't gauge it based right. off of 2 years of experience. Mm-hmm. No one's ever gotten famous because they were good at improv. But no, I mean, improv is not a stepping stone to becoming a comedian or becoming a comedy writer.
There's a lot
becoming
of great UCB improvisers who
and they're fine with that.
Yeah,
well, they're fine with that.
Writers.
I'm using this as a way.
Else.
Yeah,
my improv 101 teacher, who's one of the Sylvia Ozush, whatever.
Sylvia Ozush, I had her too.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
She's on the Stepfathers, which is like one
she's
of the
great.
Most senior teams at yep. the thing. She's like in like an incredible improviser. She works at for her day job. She works at
I don't know where she works.
She works at the website Rap Genius.
Okay.
Or Genius. And now I think it's just Genius.
All right. Well, I don't know.
It's like it's like a lyrics website.
But that's cool. I mean, and she's happy just doing improv. And that's fine. Like, I'm looking at improv because I'm still considering a career doing either comedic acting or writing or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at improv just as a way for either me to get better at acting mm-hmm. or just as a sounding board to find out what's funny and what's not funny. Because a lot of people go into it thinking if you're a great improviser, you'll become... There's so many great improvisers who...
Go on to
just be great improvisers, and that's fine. But I do wish I were more experienced in it. But what was I saying? I don't know. There's no reason right now to think that you can or can't have a career in this field, because you don't have any gauge yet. Mm-hmm. It's only been, I've only been doing it for 2 years, so I can't tell if I'm any good at it, and I can't tell, this isn't a metric,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of that made no sense at
no,
all.
No,
you cut that right out.
No, I understand what you're saying.
People are never going to hear that.
Except there's people who do it for 5 years and mm-hmm. aren't great. And
that was also my problem with UCB when I first started it, because mm-hmm. at Magnet, it's a bunch of people like me mm-hmm. who are just like kind of, they're not like, it's not like a misfit type thing, but like people mm-hmm. who just are just normal people
mm-hmm.
and they thought this would be fun to do. And mm-hmm. so they did it, and they were super down to earth. Everyone at Magnet's incredibly down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Even the people who are really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And they're incredibly down to earth. No one's
UCB,
trying to show
there
off.
Was like a
the first two levels I had at UCB, it's not even just competition. It's just like everyone trying to cram, like all these other students in the classes trying to cram funny down your throat all the time.
Hmm.
And it's not everybody like that, but you do get a lot of walks of life in UCB. And not to disparage anyone at UCB, because I think everyone should try improv, and I love UCB, and I genuinely don't dislike anyone I've met there, but it was just a different feeling for me to have people constantly trying to be people that they weren't. You know, like you're not constantly cracking jokes all day, mm-hmm. right? Like you don't just walk around just spitting off one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that got to me, because people thought that they just had to be funny all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to be funny
all
the time.
You have to show your worth. Like,
on and off. People were like basically telling you when to laugh. It was different. And now that like I've moved on, people have kind of gotten it that you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know now, because you've been there for a while. But... I mean, I'm sure I did it too. First, when I first started doing improv, I tried to be funny all the time. But mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter.
So, college,
mm-hmm.
Fordham University.
Yeah.
You don't have any like inclinations going into it to like do artistic things.
No.
When you're it's summer before freshman year of college, what is Eddie B's headspace of like what you want to get out of it? Or is it just the thing where it's like, this is what everyone does, so I just got
to
go?
It was partly that, but I just knew I needed a degree to get jobs. And I was interested, I still am interested in national security and stuff like that, counterterrorism, things like that. So,
Whoa. So
that for me was, I needed a degree to get into those.
Where did that interest spark?
Probably television when I was little. I don't really know.
You think growing up in the 9/11 era, was that?
Maybe. Maybe,
can you like kind of verbalize like what your interest in it is and like why you're so passionate about it?
I don't know. I can try. I don't know where my interest comes from. Could be 9/11. I mean, you're from the greater New York area.
Yeah, I was here.
So, you know, like you probably knew people who were affected by it at least. And so I guess that, I mean, that I remember being very, very scared. And I guess it took that with, even though I had no need to be, like, there, no one was going to come attack my house on Sun Ridge Road.
Yeah, I remember, like, when we got off of school, people just walking in the streets, like, all my friends on the street, and being like, look up, there's, like, no planes, no one's allowed to fly.
Yeah,
and
no
just, like, looking at the sky and being like, wow, the sky's empty.
as though we're littered with planes.
And then someone being like, oh, when it happened on 9-1-1, and I was like, oh, even I get that as a third grader.
Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah. I know how to dial that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I just, like, and then I got kind of pissed.
Mm.
And then I just, I don't know. I liked television where I liked, you know, like, good guy, bad guy television.
Mm.
I loved, like procedurals, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, Law and Order. I loved Bones, that show Bones. And so from an early age, my dad, like, got that I liked Bones, and so he bought me all these DVDs and documentaries about the FBI and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he clipped out some art. I guess he couldn't find any documentaries about being like a forensic anthropologist or whatever, which is fine because it's probably best that I didn't go down that road. I would have quit.
Mm-hmm.
But he found like a bunch of DVDs about being in the FBI. He would give me all these articles about it because he thought it was interesting, just like I thought it was interesting. And then I just became consumed by it, like
really
completely consumed.
What does that look like?
What does it look like?
Like, how does one being consumed?
You want me to say that, like, you walk into my room and there was a string.
Enemy number one.
Yeah, there's a bunch of pins in the wall with a string running through it and a map. No, it was just, I was just, like, super interested in it. And, like, I loved the idea that it was not clear cut, but as a little kid, I thought it was clear cut. There's a bad guy and there are people who stop him. I was like, that's me.
I could see you in your room the night we got up Bin Laden. You just being a fist pump.
Yeah, I was like, bingo.
We got him.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, so I were like a contributor.
Oh, my work paid off.
Yep. And I knew, I like read, all, I love counterterrorism. The fact that counterterrorism is necessary
that's
is
so
probably a
funny.
Bad idea.
I've
but
never
I,
heard
I,
of someone loving
I enjoy,
counterterrorism.
I find it very interesting.
Mm.
And so I would just like, I'd read everything I could about it.
What have you read?
I don't know, stuff, man.
Like books?
Some books. A lot of, like, just, like, I just got to reading the newspaper, and I get very current on current events. And so I wasn't gonna, like, people thought they knew everything. And so I would go into school, and people would, like, even when Bin Laden was killed and stuff like that, people thought, I don't like when people talk bad about the U.S., I think, if they don't know what they're talking about.
Because
I love
the U.S.
The U.S.
The U.S. of A.
Yeah, great country. Really good stuff. And so like, if you don't have a good argument, I don't like it when you kind of say negative things about it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think you should have a certain amount of pride. You don't have to, but I think you should. And so when people would say things about like our role in the Middle East, things like that, I knew a lot about it. I mean, not that I was a brainiac, but like I spent a lot of time reading about it 'cause it was one of my interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people said like false things, I would I don't know. There was always like conspiracy theories that like Bush was behind 9/11. Ridiculous things, you know?
9/11 truthers.
Yeah. Stuff like that. And also the reasons that we got into the Middle East, how we've screwed up there, things like that. And like, no one can completely understand, but I understand what happened in the Middle East to the best of my ability. And I understand that there are good things we did, bad things we did. But I just want people to have their facts straight before they yell about it. You know, like remember 2 years ago when all that stuff about torture came out and those papers came out.
Right.
I'm against torture, but and not
Why?
To turn this into a political thing, but it doesn't. Well, just because it doesn't work. If it worked, I'd be for it. It doesn't work. So there's no reason to hurt someone that badly if you're not going to. And so one of the examples that people were giving, like I had one class where it was just, you know, I forget what class it was, but they were talking about it. Like it was the class discussion. People were like, well, I'm against it because the people abuse the power to torture. I was like, well, torturing itself is an abuse. But regardless, they would be like, did you hear about this one guy who got tortured like 200, got waterboarded 200 times? And the professor was like, oh, I don't know. What's his name? And they were like, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the guy who masterminded 9/11. I don't care if you torture him and you get anything, or if you're just torturing him for fun. It doesn't make a difference at that point.
He was the mastermind of
at some point, though, like, you're just getting people who may or may not be terrorists, and you're just mm-hmm. torturing them for information that may or may not be true. Mm-hmm. And so I disagree with that. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to know if you're getting valuable information or not. So for that reason, I'm definitely against it. Also, I mean, it is inhumane, so I don't like that either. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not to turn this into a political thing. But anyway, so... I'm not the most well informed on this topic, but I am very interested.
Political thing. What? Who do you trust more in terms of counterterrorism, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump?
I don't trust either of them. I don't trust either of them at all. I think Hillary Clinton, I don't like her emails, whatever. Like, I'm tired of it now, but I will say that if she weren't Hillary Clinton and she were applying for any federal position, she would not be able to get security clearance after all that. Mm-hmm. And now she hopefully will be president. And which is also, I don't like to say, but
you said hopefully after.
Yeah, I don't want her either, but I really don't want Donald Trump.
Who do you not want more?
Donald Trump, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. It is close, but... Because mm-hmm. I don't trust him because he's crazy. I don't trust her because she's kind of proven that she shouldn't be trusted with mm-hmm. with things like that. And I also don't think she understands national security the way that other people could. I don't think Donald Trump does
in what
either.
Way?
I mean, in the same way that I don't know if Obama understood it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was.
This is me wanting to learn. I want.
Yeah, and I know, and I wasn't prepared for this, so it's okay. I'm going to give a very incoherent answer, I guess, but. George Bush, who, say what you will about George Bush, knew a lot. He was pretty good with foreign affairs. He screwed up a lot, mm-hmm. but he was willing to be very aggressive, and he was willing to do things his way, and he was willing to work with the military mm-hmm. and intelligence, and he was willing to ramp that up. I think Hillary Clinton wouldn't want to be seen as someone who would do that. I think she could do it behind the scenes. And Barack Obama did stuff. I mean, look at the drones and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
All these drone attacks and innocent people are dying. And Barack Obama, like, doesn't want to be seen as someone who's doing that, although he is doing that. And I think that's a problem. Having that inconsistency is a huge problem
mm-hmm.
because people need to know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hillary Clinton, while she would be somewhat aggressive, I think she would... I just think she would be a detriment in that area. Mm. And I don't know enough to be able to speak on it, but, and I'm sure like people listening to this are going to.
There's no way of speaking about politics without dividing people.
No, there isn't. There I needs don't want to be, divide people. I'm not.
There needs to be a mutual understanding that when anyone gives an opinion about politics, something super complicated, probably the most complicated thing in the world where there is not any clear, for anything in the world, there isn't a clear.
Yeah.
Yes or no.
Mm.
Most things there isn't like a
yeah.
We should do that.
Sure.
We shouldn't do that.
I mean, I'm sure just, there's for moral... 10 minutes I've just sounded like someone rambling about something he does not understand.
I'm saying everything in politics, especially coming from a 23-year-old person, regardless of whether or not counterterrorism is something that you is an interest of yours, everything should be taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah. I mean, people don't have to agree with me, and I didn't even state anything in a very coherent way. So in fact, they probably should not agree with anything I just said.
So then how did your interest in counterterrorism go into college? You chose to do economics as a major because of that?
I didn't know what else to do as a major. Yeah. And I knew I liked economics. I was interested in economics. Mm-hmm. So I just did that.
So how do you now, looking back at your college experience, college in general, how do you see it in terms of how it changed you? Or
What changed what?
When you look back at your college experience, how do you see how it's changed you or how it had an effect on you or why you think it was worth it or not worth it?
It was definitely worth it
because
I made a lot of great friends. And I...
Like, what did you find out about yourself? Anything?
I honestly don't know if
I found... You don't think it was one of those things?
I think everyone wants to go to college, come out, and say, well, I learned a whole lot about me.
Because mm-hmm.
it feels good to say.
Well, I think sometimes it's
and
true.
And people
it's
do.
True for me, for sure.
I did not. I don't think I did.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really come out of it a vastly different person than what I went into it. Mm-hmm. I came out smarter, probably, because I learned a whole bunch of new things.
Oh, yeah.
And I probably came out a little bit friendlier and more social. But I don't think I came out of it... I have the same beliefs for the most part. I think I'm the same. It's hard for me to tell, but I didn't notice any huge transformation. It's what happened to you?
Maybe in high school you were probably someone who, I didn't care about anything in high school.
Really?
I didn't, and I wasn't like actively thinking about myself and like how I came across or like what I wanted or like the type of person I wanted to be.
Sure.
And then when you kind of look inside more, college made me do that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand
that.
What
do I believe in? What do I want?
I can understand that.
What are the type of people I want to associate with?
You look introspectively a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I did, though. I guess I did a little bit.
But I'm saying in high school, I was never...
You didn't care.
Like maybe senior year, I started to I was a little more inside.
Sure.
And now I'm just a complete introvert.
I mean, that's good though that you like figured things out about yourself, and that's important.
Oh, and becoming smarter is definitely a thing too.
But yeah, that's a big deal. That's a very big deal. Yeah. You know, you definitely want to be smarter. Mm-hmm. And now I'm back in school now. So what's
this thing back in school? When did you decide to go back to grad school? Because you couldn't find a job?
Well, I had applied, and this is the only place I applied to because I already knew about the program because it's at Fordham still.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, Fordham story, I got to tell you after.
Oh, yeah, just tell it.
Should I just tell it?
I don't have anything interesting to say.
Well, what was the grads you just decided?
I don't have a story. Just,
I'll ask you.
It was a good
Fordham idea. Fordham story. I don't think I've ever told this on the podcast. Maybe I did.
Oh.
I visited Fordham my senior year of high school because I was considering going there.
Cool.
And it was after I went to I went with my one friend and his mom. We went to Arthur Avenue after. We walking down the street with all the Italian restaurants and whatever. And then we started talking to this like guy who's like in his 60s, 70s, like tell right away, like big wise guy, like Italian dude. Like, and he was talking to us and he was like, oh, if you guys come to Fordham, I'll get you a job at Pasquale's, which I think is a restaurant there across.
Right around, yep.
Yeah, and we're like, oh, that's great, that's great. And then we found out that he knew someone who we knew from town. So he knew the grandfather of someone that I went to school with.
Oh.
Who that my friend's mom was friends with that kid's mom.
Cool.
The grandfather's daughter.
Okay.
So we're like, oh, whatever. We got this guy on the phone. We got the grandfather on the phone that he knew. And they were talking. And he was just like, people here are telling me that you know that they know you and that you're a nice guy, but I'm trying to tell them that you're the stupidest son of a bitch I've ever met or something like that, like on the phone, just being a wise guy. So then we come back to home, Pequannock. The guy that he knew was at a baseball game at our high school because his son was playing baseball there. And my friend's mom was talking to him about what just happened. And we found out that the guy that we were talking about had just gotten out of jail for murder.
Whoa.
And that when he said, I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this publicly, but he said, oh yeah, and that Pasquale restaurant, the one that we were talking about, Pasquale is like a main guy in the mafia.
That happens.
And
that
I was like, whoa.
A lot of people around there are like a lot of restaurants now are owned by Albanians too.
Oh wow, really?
So you got two heavy duty cultures in there.
Yeah.
Very involved in the mob. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty safe street because there's just mobs.
That's like the only safe street in that area, right?
It's not a dangerous area. But even if it were, that would be a very safe street. When it was a dangerous area, that would be a safe street.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's bad for business, basically.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
So you were hanging out
just chilling
with a murderer.
With a murderer.
Doesn't make him bad.
No.
Everyone pays their dues. Pay your debt to society.
The system obviously found him to be okay, to be back in.
Yeah, the government said so.
Yeah. We could always trust the government, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so why do you want to go back to grad school?
It was an interesting program that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what was that?
It slipped.
Oh.
Microphone slipped.
Okay.
I'm not holding it, but it slipped somehow. Mm. Yeah, so I knew it was a program I was interested in. It was the only place I applied to because I figured, you know what, I could find a job somewhere. I didn't really want to go back to grad school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to. Mm-hmm. And then I left my internship.
Which was?
It was an internship at, it was called the World Federalist Movement. And it was like a human rights nonprofit that had consultancy status with the UN. And so it was pretty cool. It was fun. I enjoyed myself. And
wow.
I left because I figured, you know, there are going to be a lot of new graduates entering the market. So I'm going to have to start competing for jobs soon, and I need to just go in full force, find a job. And so months went by and I could not find a job. I was trying. And I finished my application to grad school in the nick of time. Like, I've just barely got in, and I called every day and I was like, did you get my scores yet for the GRE? And it was already past the time. Mm-hmm. And they kept saying no. And so I was like, oh God, I guess I'm not going to go to grad school then, whatever. And then they finally got them. And then a few weeks later, I heard back that I had gotten in, which was a pretty big surprise to me.
Oh, wow.
I didn't expect to get in. It's a small program. And then I figured, you know what? This is the easiest way for me to not have to look for a job at the moment. And I do, and I really love the program. So I'm very glad I did it. But it kind of...
How long is it?
A year and a half. Mm-hmm. But if I stay an extra semester, I can get my another master's degree in just economics.
What is it now then?
So it's called International Political Economy and Development. And I'm specializing in international and development economics. So since I'm already taking a lot of economics courses, I would just stay an extra semester if I got accepted and just finish off another one too.
Wow.
Which would be, I guess, beneficial. I don't really know.
Is it a lot of work?
Yeah, I'm finding it to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very busy.
How so? What is it? It's just a lot
of
reading?
Yeah, there's a lot of reading. The assignments take a long time to do. I was there yesterday because I interviewed for, I don't like to say this because if I don't get it, then it feels stupid, but I interviewed for, there's a scholarship that you get. I don't even know how to explain it. So they go, the director of our program teaches a class in the Philippines every winter for 2 weeks about monitoring and evaluation. Mm-hmm. And you can only bring like 12 students, or there's only funding for 12 students, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I went, interviewed for that. It was a 10-minute interview. It was a little intimidating because no one responded to what I said. Mm-hmm. And then I left and I said, you know what? I'm going to get some work done mm-hmm. while I'm here. And then like 6 or 7 hours later, I was not done with the one thing I was doing. It was just a problem set.
Oh my God.
It just took a long time. Everything just takes a long time. There's a lot of reading. It's not like college where, you know, a reading list might as well be a recommended reading list. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're in class or if you take notes or if you cram the day before, you could probably do okay. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. this is not. I've found pretty quickly that it's not like this. Mm-hmm. That's not like that at all. So I love it, though. It is interesting. Mm-hmm. People are very cool. Mm-hmm. I am underqualified to be there by a lot. Mm-hmm. They're all former Peace Corps people or just have done other cool fellowships or other things or service trips.
Most people are older?
Not by a lot. Mm-hmm. Mid to late 20s. Hmm. Some are, one or two are my age. But it is very cool. It's a very cool program. Yeah. Wow. What have you been doing lately?
Well, it's interesting because I guess you don't prescribe to the idea that like you can't have a net or you'll fall into it.
No. I Cameron has said that to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe a single thing that Cameron's ever said.
It's just something I've heard too.
Just, no, I know.
I think you can give just as much effort into something or two things. You know what I'm saying?
I don't subscribe to that at all. Do you believe in that?
Well, I was like, at first, I've been out of college for a year and 3 months, and I've mm-hmm. just worked at a part-time job and also taken classes and gone on auditions while that has happened. Not many auditions.
But some. That's pretty good.
And I was like, always against getting a full-time job, because then I was like, then I'll innately like not want to do the other things more just because. But now I'm like, I can get a full-time job, do UCB still on the weekends and at night,
sure.
and care just as much.
Yeah.
Feel about that.
Yeah, you can definitely do that.
And I'm applying to jobs in New York City right now.
I mean, a lot of people have, I mean, look at some of the best improvisers you know. Mm-hmm. They have day jobs.
Mm-hmm. So, Michael Caine,
mm-hmm.
he goes around the world and tutors people for SATs.
Yeah, it's great. That's cool.
That's an awesome job.
It's just like, I mean, I think it's fine to have a day job because the odds are it's not going to work out.
Michael Caine, not the English Michael Caine.
Yeah, not Alfred from Dark Knight. I haven't worried about it so much. I think it's good because this is another interest of mine. Mm-hmm. So I might as well go after that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing if I'm just going after something with all my might that I hate. Like if I were doing my fifth year to get into accounting, whatever they do.
whatever's the thing that people don't
that
like.
That would be a waste of my time because like that is a safety net that I don't want to fall into. But this is a safety net that I'd be fine falling into.
Right.
I just don't. I think that's the
I shouldn't have put all my eggs in one basket.
No, I think that's fine. That's fine.
People I have nothing to fall into.
People do that. So what?
I have a film degree.
That makes you need to do it. Yeah, so now you got to do it. Yeah. so there's nothing to fall. Though. You got to hang on.
That's so scary.
Yeah, I guess that's fun though.
Well, what are your hopes for the future?
Hopes for the future.
That's how we end usually.
Yeah. I don't know.
After you, or before you, I get tied up and you help me.
Yeah. I'm here to help you escape.
Call back.
I don't know. I would like to.
Usually right now, you just want to finish grad school and keep doing better
finish
in improv.
Keep doing better improv. Keep writing. Mm-hmm. I want to keep writing. And
we should start a practice group.
I'm finding it frustrating because I am writing a lot of stuff.
And you have no outlet for
it. I'm doing nothing with it. And I'm not even getting feedback on it, which mm-hmm. I should be. I feel it getting better. It is true. Like, you have to keep going. You have to keep hammering away at it. Mm-hmm. And it will. Like Twitter. Mm-hmm.
I'm the worst.
My tweets are bad.
Yeah.
Like, so people might read them.
They're great.
No, they're not.
I'm going to pull them up.
No, please. People might read them and be like, well, at least he probably wasn't trying for this. I was. And they've noticeably
gotten
better.
That's better than what I do.
No, I don't think so.
Do you know what I do?
What do you do?
I'll tweet something, and then if in like a minute it doesn't get a favorite, I'm like, yeah, this was stupid, and I'll delete it. And it's not out of like...
I fight that.
and it's not out of even like, oh, I want this to get a like, and it won't, so I'm going to delete it. It's just me being like, wow, this is a stupid thought.
Probably dumb.
This
no,
is
you can't feel that way. A lot of people just don't like stuff on Twitter. I don't like that much
Eddie
stuff.
Eddie B, last tweet. The first
no, don't. That's not one's not good. That one's not good.
I thought I liked it.
Liked it as you were being friendly. You're just being nice because I was going to be on your podcast today.
The first guy to say kill two birds with one stone was ruthless, efficient, and almost certainly German. Why German?
I feel like that's such a German thing. Efficient. Downright mean.
Both of those things together. Efficient, but actual mean efficiency.
Yeah.
My last good tweet was...
So now you're doing your last good tweet. You just did my last tweet.
My only tweets that I have are good because I delete all the bad ones. All
right.
The tweet I did was, I put in stars while I'm wearing a Breaking Bad Heisenberg shirt.
Oh, I like that tweet. Did I like it?
I don't know. And this was based on something that happened in real life. Yeah, a lady came up to me and said, I love that series. Did you watch? And I said, no, I just have a thing for men in top hats.
Did you actually say that to her?
I said that. And she was like, what? And I was like, no, I'm just kidding. Obviously, I watch
it. Yeah, watch it.
But the joke is like, no, I just wear the shirt. Like,
I think your tweets are good. My tweets are not good.
Well, that's because you don't see all the bad ones.
But my tweets have gotten better. And because I keep thinking about ways to write tweets. And mm-hmm. if you go, if you go all the way to the beginning, I only have like 10, 12 tweets.
Yeah.
Because I've only been doing it for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And I only write it if it's something I like. But my first five or six are trash. Mm. I mean, they're not funny.
Yeah.
They're just weird things that I said.
Yeah.
And they've noticeably gotten better as soon as I started thinking about them more. Mm-hmm. And they're not good, but they're better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like if I keep concentrating on it, they'll get better still. And so that's been like a cool feeling for me to feel like I've improved.
What do you think about the world in which we have to adhere to the social media as a thing to exist and be relevant?
Okay. I don't know. You don't have to do it, but...
in order to be relevant, unless you're like...
I wouldn't know a lot of the stuff
Robert
I know.
De Niro.
Yeah, well, Robert De Niro doesn't need to do anything anymore.
Yeah.
But I do. I need to I need to know stuff about other people. I need to know it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to be on.
Well, because you weren't on Twitter, I remember. And then you just recently got
I'm on it. I mean, I had another account.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to put jokes on that account because it was already, I tweeted for my past internship. So it was a bunch of human rights stuff. And it'd be pretty weird if I were like, if I were just like, I like my coffee. Like I like my pizza without cheese or like, it'd be stupid. It'd be super stupid, so I didn't do that.
Did you tweet that one?
No, but...
you should tweet it.
It's not good. that was just something I thought of. And so it'd be weird, so I just created a new one. But I like being on Twitter now, but mostly because it gives me ideas. I see what other people are tweeting. I see what funny people are tweeting.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be on Facebook because people are putting stuff on there that I like to... Like barring any of those tasty videos, like I like to see what other people are up to.
someone who just slowed down in front of my house.
New person in the neighborhood. I don't like the looks of that.
No. There's nothing weirder than casual slow down right in front.
I want to think that literally everyone in your neighborhood just did the exact same thing as you did. The whole neighborhood was just like, new guy rolled into town. Just everyone eyeballs this guy until he leaves.
Oh, God. Well, Eddie B.
Can I point out something before we go?
Yeah.
I'm holding a picture.
Yeah.
You know this family.
That's me.
Correct. That's you and your family.
It's me, my father, my mother, and my twin brother.
So, yeah, a description is like, just what Joe just said. Mm-hmm. But what he didn't say is that they're outside in what appears to be winter because there's snow everywhere and not a single one of you is dressed appropriately for the weather. There are no coats. There's not even a sweater.
My dad's in a polo shirt.
Your dad's wearing a short sleeve shirt. So what? Is this a set?
No, it's not. There was my grandma's backyard in Vermont. I was comfortable in
none of you look cold
at all. Button down shirt. We were taking family photos and we didn't want to be in like a coat, but we wanted the snow backdrop.
Sure.
So we all just sucked it up for like 10 minutes. It wasn't like 0 degrees.
No, I know, but it's chilly.
There's definitely snow.
The thing is, it's like it'd be funny if one of you was not wearing a coat, I could understand. Like, no, it's like they made a point. Like, no coats for this picture. Got plenty of coated
that
pictures, and not this time. Oh, this person's rolling through again.
They obviously
getting out.
Are not supposed to be here. Did you see the?
They don't belong.
Did you see the decorations of the house across the street from me?
Yeah, they did a good job.
I don't know.
Okay,
I'm gonna publicly say.
Did they listen to this?
I hope so. Maybe they'll fucking stop. Halloween, you don't need caution tape. They have a mock cemetery in
but
their
cemeteries
front yard.
Don't have caution tape.
Exactly.
On
that's
it.
Why I don't get it.
Just
maybe because it's a ghost cemetery?
You would want a wrought iron fence.
Yeah.
Or if it's an old cemetery, some stones that you stacked up.
And if I was a kid, I'd want to go exploring in there. I wouldn't want to. Maybe they leave the caution tape to make it a more of a thing. Maybe it's like where...
Maybe they really just don't want people coming onto their lawn.
Mm.
Maybe.
Do you think the caution tape really is like, hey, we put all these decorations up, but please don't touch them?
Yeah, I don't know a single person would be like, ooh, decorations. I got to go and feel them all. No, I don't think
or
that.
Or do you think that it's to add more scary things, like something bad just happened?
I think it's to add a scary thing, but it does not fit in.
No, it doesn't.
It does not fit in. If they had put a chalk outline on the grass, it would fit in.
Chalk outline? Oh, where someone was murdered?
Yeah, you know, like a police
right,
thing.
Right.
You know, that would make a little bit more sense.
I don't know things. That's another thing about improv is that I notice is when I watch improv videos on, and they'll make like a suggestion, like the Iron Age. And I'm like, what is
people
the
know what
Iron
it is.
Age?
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do you... And then someone I was watching one today where someone was like, Viejo. And the guy was like, Viejo? Did you just say Viejo? And he was like, no, VA hall. And the guy who was taking the suggestions was like, oh, like a Veterans Affairs hall. And I was like, what? I have no idea.
Improvisers are very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they say you have to be.
That guy was one of the writers for SNL.
Oh, cool.
On Fuck That Shit.
I mean, the more you know, the better you will be.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I need to learn more things.
Read some books.
I started listening to like history podcast now.
Cool.
And, like,
what
Planet
do you listen
Money.
To? Like Planet Money is an interesting
history
podcast.
And like hardcore history. And
hardcore
like,
history. If you've got 3 hours, right? That's a great podcast. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very
instead
good.
Of like just, I don't need to listen to more entertainment podcasts. I already know enough about
yeah,
all that.
I mean, I know about that stuff anyway, so yeah, there's no point
that's
now.
That's what I like.
I know. It's enjoyable.
It's what
but sometimes
I
want to learn.
It's my favorite thing, though.
Well, now you could just replay these, you know? that millennial life is just always playing when you get in the car.
Yeah, I don't listen to my own pod. Once it's posted, I never listen.
No, I might listen to this because I'm on it.
Yeah, you should.
But I don't like the sound of my... Can you make my voice deeper?
No.
when you
have a very nice voice.
No, I don't think so. That's very nice of you to say. And you said it in the creepiest way you could have. But it's... I don't...
Why? Was it the eyebrow raise after?
It was that we made direct out? Eye contact and then you started rubbing your chest or whatever.
All right. Thanks, Eddie B. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Okay, that is it. Thank you to Eddie B., Edward Barbini, for coming on the podcast. Thank you for providing me with help through being a person who's going through similar things and offering your insight. Thank you to everyone who's listened. Please You know, like us on Facebook, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, leave a rating or a review on iTunes. Visit the website, thatmillennialife.com. Go to the Twitter, @thatmillife, that I haven't been using as much, but I'm going to start using again, hopefully. Yeah, but other than that, thank you to everyone again, and I hope y'all have a good week. Y'all, who am I?